Hey everyone, welcome back to the Spates What a Lad podcast, New Zealand's favourite podcast, supported by New Zealand's favourite beer. I did make that little bit up about the podcast, but it has been awesome having Spates on board for season four. Loving recording these episodes with a cold summer ultra in hand or a gold medal lager. Well, now that the days are getting a little bit cooler, I do like to even mix it up with the Spates Old Dark. So many good options, and as you know, there is no wrong one to be made. Anyway, super grateful for having you tune in to another episode. Good on you, mate. What a lad, or what I should really be saying is what a couple of lads, as today I am joined by not just one Crusader and All Black legend, but two of them. Now, both of these lads are 50-game Crusader legends, and both of them have had over 20 caps for the All Blacks. But unfortunately, for the next 8 months, both of those tallies will not be increasing, as they've both had major knee surgery. That'll put them out for the year, including the Rugby World Cup. But I am stoked to have them on, as they're both seriously good lads, always full of energy. They are, of course, the lads themselves, George Bauer and Sevu Rees. Welcome, lads.
Thanks for having us on this famous potty, Jimmy.
Mate, you guys look good. You sound good.
And it's like a dream come true, because I would just watch all of these on like Instagram pop up, and I'm like, man, just waiting for the call up. Here we are.
Finally got you on, and both of you together. I'm looking forward to having... Yeah, like I said, not just one, but two champion lads on.
All right.
But how is it? Like, you guys obviously, you've both had pretty serious knee injuries. How are the knees feeling? Like, you're still in the brace, Gio, but Seva, you're out. You're ready to go.
Yeah. Obviously, did my ACL, and wasn't until I went to go get the surgery done, and they found out that I had she damaged the bone. So yeah, it was pretty gutted, because I couldn't put weight on it, and delays the process a little
bit.
George and I are a bit different, and obviously you can see he's in a brace, and I'll give that to him.
What have you done, George?
So the ACL. Gone MCL and a PCL. So it's multi-ligament. It's quite unfortunate, and it's kind of a freak accident the way it happened. And but the reason why I have to wear the brace is the PCL, to protect the PCL, because it still takes a bit longer for it to kind of heal up properly. It's kind of my knee happened, 2 weeks after Sevu's. So saw him down and out, and then I decided, okay,
I'll come and join you, brother, and we'll do the journey together, just like we've done the journey together on Super Rugby.
Because you two live together too, right?
Yes, yeah. No, Sevu's been a good, he's my landlord at the moment, so
yeah.
Been kind enough to open up a room for me, and so I'm staying with him and his beautiful family, which is good. And he's got a nice, beautiful daughter as well. And me growing up in a family with a lot of kids, it's good having little kids around to interact with and play with and watch them grow as well.
Oh, cool. And so you've just done your ACL, and had some bone damage, and you've done all three of them, but the rehab's still the same, 9 months for both of you.
It's a bit of because we've done different things. It's I think the first 3 months our rehab is, it looks a bit different, but then I think they said around week 12 to 14 we'll start to kind of come together, and it'll look quite identical the way we start rehabbing. So it's the first couple of months where we're totally different, and then we'll start to join our tracks together, and then should be running and kind of directional movement together as well when that time comes.
So you'll be into it.
Around nine months for Sevs, and I think myself, they reckon 9 to 12.
But
I'll make it nine. Yeah. I'll make it nine.
Great, that'll get you there. But you mentioned it was a bit of a freak accident. So what did actually happen?
We were more defense, I guess it was a more that just wasn't going anywhere. So the Reds hooker tore off the moor, and then he got tackled and tried to spin out of the tackle back into the moor, where we were in already dark places, and I had no idea it was coming. Yeah, oh, had no idea it was coming, so I couldn't do anything to protect myself. And he just came in from the side, and I just felt it, like I could just feel it, like it. Oh. You know, I'm sure the boys didn't hear me, but I did scream. So it was I just was like, straight away, everything was going through my head. Like, oh man, this is me. I think I'm done for the year. Like,
yeah,
I kind of expected the worst.
So you knew that straight away.
Yeah, and it did feel like a dislocation, and straight away I kind of like it felt like, oh, this is might be a dangerous one, man. So walking back to the changing room after, I was expecting the worst, so that I guess when the news did hit me, it didn't hit me as hard, which was just I guess a good thing. But it was the worst. So but that's how my one happened.
What about you, Seva? Yours was in the Blues game, eh?
Man, this is the moment I've been waiting for.
What happened?
I still remember it was just the start of the second half, and I tried to go over the ball, which, seen the ball there. I was like, went over. And then, a good mate of mine decided to, stop me from hopefully going to the World Cup. No, it was, Rico came for a clean out, and, just one of those clean outs where they sort of flip you on the side. And, it was just a unlucky one. You know, he was like sort of sitting on my knee and twisting me at the same time. So it was similar to Gio. You know, as soon as it happened, I just felt my knee go, and man, I was like, I tried to get up and run again.
Yeah, I remember.
I got up and I just couldn't even run. I was like, man, I've never like had anything like that. That's why I knew straight away. That's probably the the worst, yes.
Yeah, because you haven't had many injuries either, eh? Like, you're built to get through everything.
I've been lucky. This is my first major injury, so hopefully the last as well.
Was it an illegal clean-out type setup or just one of those unlucky ones?
I had the video on my phone. Lucky I didn't have the phone. I didn't have my phone with me. It was just one of those unlucky clean-outs. Mm. It was my setup, I was standing over the ball, and when he went to go, because he was sort of sitting on my knee, and when he went to go twist me, and I couldn't even do anything because I sort of had my knee locked in there, and I just couldn't do anything. So
it's nasty, eh? Even think about Quintipire's knee injury. Incident is similar to that for you, eh? In that position, and those cleanouts are the ones that are doing guys' knees with some pretty serious damage, eh? Somehow we need to clean up the game in that area where those we can get away with, not so many of these knee injuries.
Yeah, true, man. It'll be interesting to see what they do about those clean-outs, because you should have a punishment for the person that actually does a clean-out. And maybe, I was thinking about it.
Yeah, we go.
We're going off topic here.
It talks about it every day.
But imagine, if, say, someone puts you out for 8 months, that whoever did that injury to you, or they have to do the same to you. It's like a stand-down period. Once he's ready to go, and then you...
Would be brutal, eh?
People would
have no players left. We've already got 16 injuries if we take out everyone who's injured. Oh, crazy. So when you find out that you are out for 9 months, how does that news hit you? Obviously, massive year for both of you, Rugby World Cup year. How did you handle it when you were told the news?
Because obviously my one happened first. When it first happened, I was just thinking, the best possible outcome. I was like, nah, this is just, like a MCL. It's just something little. And then hit all the scans, and doc told me that, you've done, ACL, and that's going to be, I tried to deny it for about over a week. I was like, nah, doc, we can do something. And that sounds crazy, but what's in the whole of treatment.
Yeah.
That actually did go through my mind as well.
Trip to Fiji, get these leaves.
Yeah. And I was like, man, World Cup Super Rugby's just pretty much just getting started. It was so gutted, man. And then, and obviously not long after that, happened to my mate here as well. So But yeah, in a way, you know, I mean, now it's, you know, I've sort of passed that and having Gio, obviously we're living together.
Yeah.
Which, you know, just makes the journey a bit more sweeter than what it would have been if I did it by myself.
Was it the same for you, Gio?
Yeah, it was, once I kind of did find out the official news from the surgeon, I kind of went in a bit different. My mindset was expecting the worst. Like, I was expecting that I'm out. So, when he did tell me, I wasn't as like, down about it. I kind of just had I did think about, I guess opportunity missed to represent, possible opportunity to represent our country at a World Cup, one of the biggest sporting occasions in the world kind of thing. So, and it only comes around every 4 years. And, all those things did go through my mind, but, I'm quite lucky, not lucky, but I am quite like a religious, quite religious and quite, I guess, strong in my faith and believe that everything happens for a reason. And, I believe that my God kind of puts everything there for a purpose. And so that was kind of also a bit of, helped me with my mindset and to try and stay positive and understand that this is here for a reason. And maybe it's all part of it to learn something about myself and my journey and, maybe find other things outside of rugby that will help, myself and my family and my friends. So that's the kind of outlook I've had on it. And, it's started off well for me and I'm enjoying the rehab at the moment and, still do like look outside and watch the boys train and, you still have the urge of like, man, I wish I was there or, but then I kind of just refocus and understand that, it's all part of the journey. It's all part of it. So,
But it's such a good mindset, such a cool mindset to take into any injury, I think. But you mentioned a few things that you want to do, grow yourself or do outside of rugby. Anything you want to share?
I was actually talking to Seb the other day that we might, actually start like learning how to really, really get good in the kitchen and, a bit of knife skills and baking and stuff like that. Cause we've got a lot of time. We realize we, after rehab and gym in the morning, we've got the whole arvo off. So it'd be good for us to kind of, expand our knowledge in the culinary. We've also actually, signed up for, some coaching courses and stuff. So we've actually got our level one coaching certificate.
We read it. Wow, that was quick.
So we're on to it. We'll probably get into our level two, but I guess it's something there that we're just to stimulate our minds while we're in this kind of stage of rugby.
And is that something you could see yourself both doing post footy?
It's probably under eights or haven't really thought about it yet post footy in terms of coaching, but I guess we'll be have something or good to have like that, eh? And we both interact well with people and kids as well, so also thinking like, because I've got a lot of time as well for myself, it'd be good to kind of maybe pick up on my studies which I left way behind, just also to get the mind and the brain kind of ticking, or else I'll just be a gym junkie. And,
study did you do?
I was doing a bit of teaching.
Yep.
And then, had my final year, but then I got kind of
correct.
Moved up. Moved up in the rugby world. And
so you've got 1 year to do to get a teaching degree. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I think it's still valid. It's been about 5 years now, but I checked it like, I think last week and it said it's still valid. I was like, oh yeah, it is. we'll see.
And there's one more project that I've seen you sort of doing around the base with a wee camera, etc. But what are you guys doing there? What's in the bag there?
What are we doing there?
This is the master planner right here.
Is he? He's like the Peter Jackson of that.
Because when we both obviously found out that we were going to be out for the season and, every day we'd talk about or come up with ideas of new things to try and do or like fill in time. And then Gio actually mentioned that, it'll be cool for us to, capture like the journey, of getting back to, when we do return to play. And it's a pretty cool thing, because that, we every day we're just, taking photos and videos of all our rehab stuff. And, it's just being real in everything we do. So, that way, and obviously the planners, to put all of this together at the end and, and show the fans or the people that follow us, and it'll be good inside, be good for the fans or just the people out there to see what it actually takes to get back to playing and, you know, and the process as well, which is bloody tough.
Yeah, that's cool. I love that. And who are you going to just release it on yourselves or Netflix approaching you?
I've been in contact with Netflix and Neon as well. So waiting for them to reply to my emails. But we'll probably just release a few videos here and there on YouTube. We're just thinking of a name. If you've got any good names, Jimmy,
maybe we could put it to the audience. What have you got so far? Any good ones or any ideas?
We've thought up some silly ones, but not suitable. We're just trying to think of a name, and I'm just trying to get my head around video editing and things like that. But we're just trying to make it as real and raw as possible. But also, like, just to cover on the whole idea of it was also just for also people in the same boat that are not in professional environments. I've seen, like, you know, the general public, and if they get an ACL injury, man, like, the amount of work it takes for them to get it back to normal is huge. For us to be in every day, it's like a lot of work. So just little videos out there for, I guess, club players that have had the injury, just to help them, see, okay, I can do this and do that, to, I guess, give them a bit of knowledge on how to help them through their injury. I mean, it doesn't also only have to be the knees. It can be whatever. Because Sevi always shares his mindset and rehab and stuff. So he take a few gems from that, whoever's watching the video. So, it's just to kind of help the people out there in the same situation, or people that just need a bit of motivation that are going through similar injuries and stuff.
So cool. Have you released any yet? No.
No, not yet.
When's the first release? Like, when are we thinking? When can we expect one? Or is that?
This is the Jack Grant of our project. You know, he's all over it. I'm just going with whatever he tells me to do.
Let's say hopefully by the end of May, early June. We can, just probably like a
sneak peek sort of setup.
We'll kind of run out maybe weekly or every fortnightly kind of videos of our journey up until each of us take the field, which would be pretty cool. Graduate, I guess.
Graduate through the injury process.
Yeah.
And you guys, you'd probably be taking the field at the same time roughly too, eh?
Yeah.
If we do all the rehab stuff right, if we nail it. And
is it Crusaders 2024, round one?
Yes.
Will that be the game?
Jeez, 2024,
Mate, what a day. They're at the new stadium, sold out, the two boys returning.
If we hype it up properly, it'll go good. It'll be good.
And is that something you can see yourself doing even post-injury, like a bit more content or content creation?
It'll be, pretty cool. I mean, that's the way the world's moving, you know, like moving. Like, obviously, you got your podcast like this and it's reaching out to, millions. The world. Yeah, millions, billions, if not billions. But, I guess it's good to, like, learn those little skills while we can and just have it in our back pocket for when a time does come in handy, we can always – chuck it out there and use our skills then. So, I'll definitely be trying to learn the most I can about, how the hell all this technology works and video editing and things like that. So, but it's quite fun, once you kind of get one video, another video, edit together, and it's like, whoa, this is actually quite cool, and you can actually be real creative and use your creative juices. It's pretty, it's actually quite addictive.
I can see you're excited, mate. You're born for it. Oh, that's good stuff. But one thing I do want to talk to you guys about, obviously you both got really awesome journeys, the way you've sort of come through, Sevi from Fiji and Gio from second 15 of your school. But I do want to go through those journeys. We'll start with you, Sevi, growing up in Fiji. What was it like for you growing up in Fiji? Obviously, I've been over there a couple times now, and you always just see the kids just playing just footy all the time, eh? Like in the water or on any field they can get on. It's next level over there, eh?
Like you said, that's all I knew, and that was the life that I knew. you know, I grew up in Fiji. I was born there. Wasn't until I was 15. Yeah, and when I moved over to New Zealand, then that's sort of when I, you know, moved over here. And then, you know, it's obviously a way different life that we live here. You know, it's, and then that's, you know, you just have all these moments, the flashback moments. You just, you know, just so grateful and, you know, of the life that I, you know, that I managed to live in Fiji and what my parents taught me and just everything, you know, things that I could carry with me for forever. And, yeah, it was pretty, you know, it's special, you know, growing up in the islands and moving over here, trying to yeah, get a life and, yeah, you know, make the most of every opportunity that comes my way. And, you know, I didn't even think any of this would be possible or be sitting here. But, yeah.
So what actually brought you over to New Zealand? You came to Hamilton Boys?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, when I was 15, I was playing first 15 in Fiji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I was playing first 15 for my school in Fiji, and when the, my team made it to the finals that year, and like they do every year, they have all these schools that come over to Fiji to you know, give scholarships to kids that they think, you know, go all good at rugby and stuff like that. So yeah, I was. I still remember I was approached by this Australian school, and yeah, you know, just like any other kid in Fiji, man, it's you know, any opportunity that comes your way, you don't really think twice about it. You just almost just I'm taking this one, because you know, anything to get out of Fiji, you know, just to for a better life. And yeah, and then so that Australian school came to me, and and I was all set to go to Australia, and wasn't that, because that was the semi-final week that that Australian school approached me, and the week after, and that's when Hamilton Boys approached me, and yeah, they approached me, and I told them, oh, sorry, you know, I've already said yes to this school here in Australia, and so it was all set that I was going to move to Australia, and because because Hamilton Boys, I didn't know that, you know, Henry Spade, all those boys, they went to that school. And so what Hamilton Boys did, they got hold of Henry Spade and a few other Fijian boys to message me to tell me that,
go to
Hamilton Boys, and you know, when I saw their messages and stuff like that, and you know, being a Fijian, you know, you look, because I remember Henry Spade, all those boys, you know, you look up to them growing up, and yeah, straight away I was like, oh man, that'll be cool. And I was telling my old man, oh no, let's just change it, I want to go here now. And yeah, you know, we changed it, and at the end of that year, moved to New Zealand. I went straight to the boarding house and went straight to school there. So.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. So you're almost an Aussie, mate. Could have been playing for the Wallabies. Sliding doors, eh? That's crazy. And what position were you in Fiji? Because like, you've got all the skills, goal kicking, kickoffs, mate.
Yeah, so in Fiji, I was playing second five and fullback.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I was playing second five and fullback.
And kicking goals?
Yeah, and kicking goals too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, moved over to New Zealand, even for the first 15 here in Hamilton. I was playing the similar positions. I was playing 12 and 15.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't play wing at all. And this is a fun fact. I've never played wing my whole life until I made my first debut for Waikato.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just like any other Fijian, right?
You,
your lock or anything, you'll end up on the wing. I'm telling you that.
There you go, Gio.
You'll end up on the wing, right? Whether you like it or not. Just.
No, it's opposite for me.
It was opposite, bro.
Yeah.
Well, and how did you find going to Hamilton Boys? Obviously, I've spoken to Noah about it on his episode, like how professional and how full-on that rugby program is. Coming from Fiji, it must have been an eye-opener.
Man, yeah, I was just like, because I went to a boarding school in Fiji as well. So in the boarding school here, like in Hamilton, like, you know, I just comparing the two of them, I was like, man, this is like a hotel, you know, like compared to what I just left. And but yeah, it was, man, their training, their program there is, it's just crazy. You know, that's why they the best in the world now, you know, because they won that world first 15 or whatever it's called. And yeah, and because Noah's old man actually, you know, coaches.
Was he your coach?
Yeah. It's a funny story. Like when we used to train first 15, we'd be, you know, you'd fall on into our training and Noah would just be on the sidelines. He was still a little, honestly, I see, even now, I'm always telling him, you were still in nappies when, you were still in nappies when we were to first 15 training. But yeah, it was crazy because he was actually on the sidelines, would be like the ball boy would be, you know, giving us a, or running in water too as well and stuff like that. But yeah, training, you know, they train like Monday mornings and, they almost train like three times a day. And that's almost, they train more than club rugby, you know. And they, and then for their preseason games, they would play like prem teams, like club teams. Honestly, they just, I don't know what the, what Noah's old man's thinking. Like, yeah, let's put all these kids to play, all these, all these dads and all these older guys. And, but yeah, it's, you know, that's just how they do it. And it's been working for a very long time. And it's pretty cool and just special too.
Completely different to your school, eh, Gio?
Well, completely different. Jimmy, where? Far out, man. Maybe one training a week for our first 15.
But so you grew up in Wellington, am I right? Born in New Zealand, grew up in Wellington?
Yep. Born and raised in Lower Hutt, Wellington.
And then, went to, did all my schooling there in the Hutt, up until my Dear Tider College.
First All Black ever from that prestigious school.
I thought there was one way before, but they must have just got a photo of someone and just put it on the wall.
A supporter.
Apparently I am the first All Black from Tider College, and it's pretty special, I guess. Especially from a neighborhood that's, you know, quite a low socioeconomic area, and it's always good going back and going to my club and showing, you know, the next gen that it is possible from, you know, you just have to put in the hard work. So,
that's
it.
And Sevi was obviously a very gifted rugby player, gifted athlete, scouted at a very young age. I think you were quite different, weren't you? You weren't exactly the one everyone was trying to get in their first 15, were you?
Yeah, Matt, I was the one carrying the water bottles on for the second 15. Yeah, boys, I'm here. If you need a sub, just let me know. Oh, man, far out. Definitely a bit of a late bloomer. I didn't do a single gym at school, at high school. I didn't start gymming till, I think I was 20 or. I was just grateful. Just loved rugby, though. Still loved rugby and watching and playing when I got minutes. So, wasn't the. Kind of came up the long way around and slowly grafted away and grind away and eventually kind of got there. So
You weren't in the first 15 at all. Literally the water carrier. Yeah.
There were times where I was like, oh yeah, we might need you on the bench. Oh, okay, sweet. Yeah, gear up. I was first 15 for a bit, but I remember playing second 15 as well, and because I wasn't needed yet first 15. But I guess at the time then I wasn't a great rugby player then. I was overweight. I was unfit. Didn't understand rugby at all, so
how did it all turn around for you? How do you go from that position to one of the great All Blacks?
After high school I started kind of hitting the gym and taking rugby a bit more serious and started to get a bit more fitter, and was playing a lot of sevens, like club sevens, because seven scene in Wellington's huge, so it was a good way to get myself fit and get my skills up to par and things like that. So and I started to kind of my I guess rugby style kind of to change, and I started to enjoy it a lot more because I was a lot more fitter. I was a lot more skillful, and kind of transferred from a prop through to I was playing seven and eight for Avalon Prems back then.
Really?
So transition from that front row to loosies, and oh man, I love playing loosies. It was a lot more freedom, no scrums. It was like but and that's kind of how I kind of started getting into more serious rugby and
yeah, I was fortunate enough to, after that high school, to get straight into or make Wellington under 20s, I think, back then. Yeah. So,
yeah, as a Lucy,
as a prop,
oh, as a prop
but I was playing Prem's Lucy, but they accepted me as a prop, so I don't know how that happened, but I was jamming prop. So, but yeah, it was just that I think the last 2 years off, or the 2 years after high school, was just that little change of mindset and fitness and gym and kind of changed the way I played rugby, like, rapidly. All of a sudden change, and I guess that's when the rugby genetics started kicking in and stuff. I realized, I can actually play. So
that's cool. Sevens, you don't often see props, especially like unfit props, go and put themselves out on the sevens field, because that's like the worst place you want to be if you're unfit prop with, like you said, not so that much skill, but and once you sort of unleashed it, putting yourself in that that sort of environment, mate, you flourished.
It was actually our village team from where I'm from in Fiji. They formed up in Wellington, and so because I'm from there, I'm like, I'm going to represent my, and that's how I kind of started playing a bit of sevens. And we went up to Thai level sevens, which is a huge kind of Fijian sevens comp in Auckland. And and I guess growing up as Fijians, sevens is the number one sport you watch, because Fiji is so good at it. And And we love the way they play. They're just so fluid. And so you want to go and do that as well, because you're Fijian. So that's what also kind of inspired me to play a bit of sevens as well, because it's in our blood as Fijians. And
they love it. Fijians love the sevens. So then you end up getting picked up by Otago. How did that happen?
Yeah, so so I was playing club rugby at Wellington. And then my uncle works on the Inter-Islander. And so he's he's an engineer on the Inter-Islander, and so he's talking to an electrician on the Inter-Islander, and his name was Marty Paris. And Marty's like, we're looking for a few Fijian boys, Tongan boys, Samoan boys, if you know anyone, to come and play for our club in Dunedin. And then my uncle's, I think I caught my nephew back at home. So he comes back to me and he's like, these guys in Dunedin, you know, send them your rugby CV and they'll pay for your flights down and sort you out with accommodation, and you can go play club for them for a season. I was like, But at the time, I guess my fiance now was living down there. We weren't together. So I was like, she's down there as well. So it's she believes she's the reason why I moved down, but we'll just say it was Harbour Hawks. But ended up sending it through, and then Harbour Hawks kind of shipped me down, and ended up moving down to Dunedin, and I began a new life there, and it was so new to me. I mean, seeing the student life and, you know, like living up in Wellington, have no idea what's down south until you move down there. And it's like, whoa, this is actually a big university town. There's so many young people here. It's actually a nice, like, little scene to be part of when you're, you know, 19, 20, 21. So Harbour Hawks shipped me down and played club rugby for Harbour Hawks. Sponsored by Chipmunks. I'm sure Spades will know a lot about Harbour Hawks as well. So, ended up playing, I think, 80-odd prem games for them. So,
80
games. They'll be like, no, only 70-something, but it must be,
So how many seasons did you do before Otago came knocking?
So I moved down that 2014. That was almost a decade ago. And then, that year there were shortage in props, so I managed to get one cap in that 2014. The year I moved down, I was in there for a couple months, and I played for Otago, and there was Tay Walden, they had Lee Allen, a few of the Aki Saoli, a few of the older dogs that I call them the old Otago boys, but because they're all gone now, but they're all playing overseas. But played that one, and was kind of in the mixer up until didn't get a cap until 2018, I think. So,
four years.
Wow. 4 years where I didn't get any sunlight.
How'd the debut go? No good.
It was good. we lost against Northland. I think that's when Dan Pryor carved up against us, and ended up getting contracted to Highlanders the year after. So, that was debut, and I just remember how fast the game was. I was like, first professional game, I was like, this is fast, man.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how fast the game was. I was only, I think, 109, 110 dripping wet. I was still holding in the scrum, but So Otago, I think that summer they gave me a whole lot of mass protein to go away, go shift some tin. Boy, came back the next year, came back the next year, 125. 125. So I ran a PB Bronco that year before, that 2014, came back 125. I think I was one of the slowest props. I think I ran like a real, like a 15 yo-yo.
Oh, wow.
I was like, that's real low. That is low. And like it's a couple the other of props links. Were like, was that you breathing? And I was like, nah, but it was me. I was just big. I was like, it was probably one of the strongest I've ever been, but just so unfit. Like I didn't get that balance right. It was no good, eh? They just told me, hey, yeah, go bulk up. Come back.
You don't know, do
you?
Oh,
you don't know. You don't know any better. I'm like, oh, I'm listening to you. All right, I'm going to go bulk up. Don't do any fitness. I did no fitness. Like, I did no running at all. I had no idea. I was like, what is this, man? Now, thinking back to it, I'm like, fuck, that is silly, man. That is silly.
Yeah, well, it sort of took you 4 years to find that balance to become the right weight, right fitness, and understand the game that you were trying to play, right?
Yeah, I guess it 4 years, gets a bit more mature and they realize that, you know, you have to have that fitness in your game. You can't just be big and strong. And once again, I took on Sevens again and I started training with Otago Sevens. If you probably wouldn't believe it, and actually went to go jam a tournament for Otago B7s in Omaru. Right. So I was like, and I found it was a good way to get me fit again, skills back up. So over the 4 years, it was just finding that balance and getting the balance right between the size and the fitness and the skills and things like that. And fortunate enough, when I was, you know, I didn't get injured or anything, being a different size, I was quite lucky that I didn't get injured, and my body was able to withstand that weight, but I managed to trim it right back down and kind of up to 2018 and, kind of played for Otago again. And so that was pretty cool
to get
called up here by Tom Donnelly and Ben Herring. And, they gave me an opportunity. And then, I took it with both hands. And I think there was this one game, and it was against Canterbury. And I think I played like 76, 77 minutes of the whole game. Like I got called into Otago, oh, we need you. Boys have gone down. I hadn't been training with them. And so I went in, played like 76 and still felt fit, 76 minutes. And then,
sevens.
I was like, man, the sevens, you know, that lower kind of energy reserve is there. So, and then lucky enough, that was the game that Jace Ryan was watching. And so he kind of based his selection for preseason off that game. And so he came into Crusaders after that through Jace Ryan. And the main reason why he picked me was because he saw how long I was working for the engine that I had.
The right man to impress.
And my old man always told me, like, you just never know who's watching. Every game, every opportunity you get, just take it with two hands, because you never know. So that's pretty cool. But that's the kind of the long journey that I had up into professional rugby. So.
Yeah. What about you, Seva? You were a bit different, eh? You sort of just broke straight onto the scene and MPC scoring tries for fun all over the show. No fitness issues or anything.
My final year in school, first 15, I was very, very lucky. I got signed on my last year in school when I was in year 13. And then the end of that year, did pre-season and stuff. And I was kind of similar to George, you know, started playing sevens and I actually started to take sevens like pretty seriously, because I was like, man, like I would love to actually play sevens like internationally, and obviously I had to kind of stop because I was playing Mitre 10 it was my first year, so I was just had to be like had my best foot forward every time. So played Mitre 10 2016, and it was my first year. Yeah, played similar to Gio, they named the Super Rugby team was the end of 2018. Because every year when I was playing Mitre 10, set different goals every year. And a big dream of mine was to play Super Rugby, and I don't know, this sounds crazy, but because I came straight from Fiji to Hamilton, and Chiefs was the only team that I knew, and I was just, I'd love to play for the Chiefs, that was the only team that I wanted to play for. And I stayed there. I'd go in and train with them. When they have injuries or need numbers, and
you know, just, yeah, but I was just doing that for, like, I think so for like 4 years. I was just doing that and nothing really happened.
Oh, true. Was it that long?
Yeah, yeah. And talks would, you know, they'd like tell me all these things and, this is this, you need to grow this. And it wasn't until the end of maybe 2018 when they named the Super Rugby teams.
Mm.
And yeah, I remember I woke up that morning and, you know, all the teams had been released and it was like no phone calls, no nothing. And yeah. Then I was just like, man, dude, and I was just gutted because, you know, I felt that I've, you know, been playing some good rugby. And, but, you know, and again, I was that morning, I was just laying there, just seeing the Super Rugby team. And literally, I just got up to have breakfast and my phone went off and was like ringing. And I seen this number and I was just like, man, I don't know whose number is this. So I just let it ring and I was like, okay, no, never mind, we'll wait. And then rang again. And then, but when he rang again, I wasn't by my phone. So, and then, but he left a voicemail and then I picked it up and you know, the voicemail was, oh, hey, Sirisa, it's Scott Robertson here.
Oh, true.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was just someone taking the piss, you know, because there were probably some of my mates who knew how bad, you know, I wanted to play Super Rugby. And,
yeah.
And I picked the phone up and I rang it back and, yeah, and it was Razor. And, you know, it was just like, oh, hey, mate, you know, we've got a few All Blacks that's, you know, like the All Blacks, you know, how they come, they don't do the preseason. And, yeah, so he's like, oh, I've got a few All Black boys. It'd be great if, you know, if you want to come down and, you know, join us for preseason. And straight away, you know, I told him, oh, mate, I would literally do anything right now. I would, you know, I'd leave today if I'd like to come down to Christchurch. And then, yeah, and then he told me, oh, mate, our manager will get in touch with you. And that was good old Fletch, sorted flights, everything. And that was the turning point pretty much. And, and I guess that's where I first met Jude as well.
Yeah.
I still remember that was came down to the screening thing that they do, you know, where you just with the physios and do all these testings and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I actually met Jill and I was talking to him and wasn't until later. And I asked him, I was like, oh, what position do you play? Cause I thought he was actually a Lucy.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
The whole time I thought he was a Lucy. That was good times, man. And you know, from when they all happened and I mean, with Israel Dagg, because he announced his retirement at the start of 2019. And, you know, because I was cover for him. And then, you know, they told me a few months after that, they were like, oh, we'll keep you down here because Israel Dagg's just announced his retirement. So, but I was so That's happy. Crazy, and that was good. But, like, I mean, yeah, for Israel Dagg, man, as a top man and watching him as I was growing up as a just a crazy athlete, man.
Yeah. What was the feedback you were getting that was stopping you from getting an opportunity earlier? Like, seems a long time, four years.
I call bull on some of those feedbacks that some of those coaches are giving me. I was like, oh, because you know, you look at me like I'm not the tallest. And they said to me basically that, you know, they've got this list of players and I'm literally right at the bottom. You know, they had, James Lowe, all these other boys like Tony Pulu, other guys there. Like, and then they pretty much said to me, oh, you know, you've got all these guys and we just think they're better than you. And I still remember, I don't know if I should say his name. I still remember the conversation that was with Straws.
Yeah, yeah.
Good old Straws. He just told me that, I had all these guys in front of me and I wasn't good enough to play Super yet. I remember it was me and him in the room and I was like, he was telling me that I didn't even know how to take it. I was like, oh, well. And then it wasn't until we played the Chiefs that my first game was for, it was when we played the Chiefs was here. And it was the best feeling. And I still remember that week when Razor told me, oh, you're going to be starting this week. And it was against the Chiefs, and I was like, man, this is the game I wanted to play. And then, you know, that game there was man, it was a cool game, and played all right. And so the game was on, I don't know, Friday or Saturday, and then by Sunday, the Chiefs pretty much had a contract again for me. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, yeah. So the game was on Friday or Saturday, and then on that Sunday, the Chiefs, yeah, wanted to sign me because they knew that I was injured. I was just here for injury.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so those cheeky guys, man. They, straight away, they're like, oh, I've got a contract here for you. You know, if you want to sign it, like.
You are ready.
The faster you sign it, yeah, the faster you sign it.
Come back now, son.
I was so close to telling him, nah, I'm not ready yet. But yeah, that was, you know, that's pretty much the journey. Yeah.
Far out, that's crazy. Yeah. And then your journey to the All Blacks happened pretty quick.
Yeah, see that, yeah, I mean, up until now, that was like, that's, oh, yeah. I don't even know how it happened.
Yeah.
It was freaky, man. And yeah, it was 2019, let alone my first game for Super Rugby. And
yeah.
In that year, 2019 as well, was when I first got selected into the All Blacks, and it was a World Cup year too as well, and like things were like happening so fast for me, and, and I was like, man, like, yeah, I was just like almost watching things unfold, and I'm like, man, that's crazy. And yeah, and I mean, like, you know, I was pretty lucky too as well that, you know, I had guys like Richie and Davey, that, you know, those guys, you know, if I'm being honest, yeah, those guys could make people look good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as much as that, but those guys, just what they do, man, like, you know, Davey, man, he's a wizard. Like, things he can do, and even Richie, like, most of my tries I scored that year was off Richie's kicks.
Cross kicks. Yeah. Cross kicks. I remember.
Most of it was off Richie's cross kicks, and got to a point I was like, man, this is good. I'm scoring tries. Maybe I just keep doing this. And yeah, it happened so fast. And, you know, I managed to be that year, I was, you know, consistent every week. And, you know, all this All Blacks talk and stuff, I was honestly, I didn't even think about it at all. Yeah, they named the first for the rugby championship. They named the first squad, and it was live on TV. I still remember, because George and I, we lived together too on our first year. So
yeah.
We're both laying down.
It was us two.
So two of us, yeah. We were just laying down there watching the TV, just laying there while the guy was just like naming the, and then, yeah.
Kieran Ree.
That's right, yeah, it was Kieran Ree.
Reese.
Yeah.
Tasman.
It was Kieran Ree was before me, yeah. And they named, called my name out, and man, that was, it's like a dream. Crazy, yeah.
Boy, this guy just sunk into the couch like that, and I went and started hugging him, kissing him on his forehead. I was like, man, far out. And then his phone just started going off. Yeah. Boy, it was awesome to experience that moment with Sev. So.
And how did you, when did you get named? Not this time.
My one was, when was it? 2020.
The World Cup.
The year after.
That's right.
And then, so.
And what was your announcement like? Were you guys together for that one as well?
It was during Flight of 10.
Oh, yeah, we were already
camp.
We were in camp.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Moods went down. And then Tom Donnelly called me into his room, and he was like, George, I want to talk to you this morning. We're about to kick off meeting. And he was like, talking about my game in the weekend. I was like, oh, yeah. And then he got a call. It's from Shandy from the All Blacks, and then he gave the phone to me, and he knew it was coming. He just told me to get in, so he gave the phone to me, and he's like, "Oh yeah, this is Shandy. We're calling to say that you've been selected to travel to Australia, the 2020 Australia squad or something like that." And man, I was just head down, and I was like, "Fuck!" I was kind of like, "Yeah, tears." And then Sass was like, "We'll go." Tell the team. And so I went into the team room for Otago, and Sass told the team, and everyone started cheering. And that's when I was like, I can't hold these tears, man. This is an awesome moment. It's such a special moment, man. So I found out with my Otago boys, and straight after that, called the parents, and you know, the missus, and
that's
that
was so cool, eh?
Yeah.
And then what was it like for you going into the environment? Did you feel comfortable or like?
Yeah, it was definitely intimidating.
Yeah.
My first roommate was Sam Kane. So, you know, we got to Australia. Sammy. He's shaking like this. And then got there. But
fortunately enough, you know, it was the first night. Yeah, because you know, I'm not a snorer, but I snore. And so the first night, I knocked out, and I was, you know, just trying to go to sleep straight away. And then all of a sudden, I just hear roll over, or like I just hear pillows. Like I was like, fuck, it was my snoring, and I was like, fuck, I can't sleep with this guy. And then the next day, we had to change roomies because my snoring is too much for Sammy. So I swapped with Alex, with Joe Moody. Joe Moody moved in with Sammy, and I went with Alex Hodgman, who's another quite a snorer. So, and we're quite deep sleepers as well, so we cancel each other out. So fortunately enough, my experience with Sammy Kane, I was like, at the time, you know, being new to the All Blacks environment, it's quite scary, but lucky my snoring got me out of that. I room with him now, but like back then I was like, far out, Sammy Kane, you know, it's like shit.
Snoring, don't room with Big Geo then. And then your first game, mate, like what was that experience like?
Oh yes, that was at Mount Smart. That was 2021 was my first game, yeah.
Tonga, was it?
Yeah, it's at Tonga Tonga, where I came off the bench and I remember singing the national anthem and, you know, same old story. The tears come rolling down your eyes and you think of, you know, the sacrifice and the journey that you've been through while you're singing the anthem, and you just sing it with so much pride and passion, and because it comes from the heart, man. It's a special feeling, and you don't feel it much like doing anything else. It's a different feeling, eh? Running out against Tonga and, I guess getting my kind of taste of international rugby was definitely a special moment, and the whole family were there to celebrate and watch me receive my cap. So,
Did you feel like you were good enough to be in the All Blacks? Did you feel like it from the start, or do you still feel like it, or like?
I don't know. At the start, I definitely didn't feel like I was, good enough to be a part of the team. But I always get told, I'm selected there for a reason by my family and friends, and I always put my best foot forward. And so I kind of had to try and, change my mindset to, I actually deserve to be here. I am here for a reason, and I need to put my best foot forward and really push for a place in the 23 kind of thing. And so, that was probably, after that, my debut, after the Fiji games, I think it was that year, then my mindset started to change and I was like, oh yeah, I really need to be the number one prop kind of thing, and just have that mindset so you can actually push harder and not just be a float around and say, oh, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be All Black now. And no, you can't have that in that environment, or else you get figured out quite quickly and someone younger and stronger can come up easily and take that spot. So So
what about you, Siv? Are you similar, or are you pretty confident all the way through?
Nah, honestly, no. Because, at the start, like I said, you know, that 2019, you know, you had guys like, you had like Bridgie, you know, Rico, had Ben Smith. Boy, sucking the hall of those boys. And, that's why I was just so focused in, like, just trying to play consistently in Super Rugby. Mm. And when the All Blacks happened, you know, it's almost like I had to adapt faster to as well, quicker, if I want to be, obviously, you know, because like what George said, you know, you get recognised for a reason, and you obviously have to almost play up to that standard, you know, and show them why, you know, they chose you for a reason. So you have to show them why, you know, you belong there. And just have to start growing the game like very fast, every year, you know, there's always this like new guys that's coming through, or like you see guys carving up at Super Rugby level. Just, you know, gives you the biggest headache. You're just like, but it's a good thing. It's a healthy thing to have, and it just keeps you on your toes and makes you work hard every day. So if you want to be, you know, at the international level. And up until now, it's watching all these, especially now, even now, being out injured. Just watching like the Super Rugby every week, and you're like, man, seeing all these guys carve up. You're like, oh, man, these coaches probably forgotten us by next year. Like, no, hang on, who's that?
So your first year, was it? You said Rugby World Cup, So those massive games. I remember going to that first one, South Africa, and seeing you out there and being like, wow, this is like such a cool, must be such a cool experience for you.
Like, you know, that year, the World Cup, man, because like, you know, it's World Cup is the pinnacle of rugby, and I was there, but you know, when they named the team and the All Blacks, you know, at training when they named the team, you know, for the World Cup, and I was like in a way, I was like, man, like being selected to go to the World Cup, it's like, I don't know what can beat that, you know, and then being able to play, like, it's even more special, and you're just standing out there running out, and you just see the stadium packed, and obviously we made it right up to the semifinals, and even before the semifinals, I was like, man, like, when the semifinals, like, this is top four if we do well here, you know. Who knows, you could be part of a winning, you know, lift up that Rugby World Cup. But yeah, it was just, I can't even find the words to describe.
Yeah, that's so cool. And then talk to me about sort of last year. Obviously, you didn't get as many opportunities last year. What do you sort of put that down to? What are your thoughts around that?
In the All Blacks environment, when you don't get selected, like, you know, they sit you down and you catch up with the coaches and they give you feedback. They give you feedback and stuff like that, which allows you to go and work on it when you do have work on times. And so, you just have those feedbacks and you just keep doing it. And, it was frustrating for me because, you know, last year I felt good. I was like, you know, consistent. And, you go into that environment and obviously it's up to the coaches, you know, the type of gameplay they want to play and all these things. And like you said earlier, you know, it's a few times I've been told that you're not going to play this game because this is going to be a high ball game. And like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, like, don't get me wrong, I can still get up,
it's just because I'm short doesn't mean I can't jump.
Like, I've been told, like, a few times that I'm not going to get played because this game here, you know, this team's going to kick us out all high balls and stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, man, that's sad.
Yeah.
This guy's sad, guys. Hey.
Sorry, Steve, you're not playing today. You're scrumming.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, last year, you had all these guys too as well. Like, you know, like I said, wingers in New Zealand, like, it's a pretty tough position too as well, man. Like, you know, now I've got, like Caleb Clark was in there, Mumba was in there too as well. Lester, like just all those guys. Competition's always just real tough.
And what about you, Gio, last year for you? How was it going before you got injured? How were you feeling?
Yeah, I was feeling good. It was definitely a lot more, I guess last year there were a lot more, I felt the props, the front rowers had a lot more competition in terms of starting and trying to get into that 23, especially the Looseheads. It was Gruda, myself and Offa, so we were kind of going at it, which was good. It was healthy competition, and that's what you want because that's the only way you can grow. If there's no competition, then how can you get better kind of thing? So, managed to get a few games and rest a few games as well. So, found it still an awesome opportunity to you know, be a part of the All Blacks last year and travel to that Northern Tour and as well as South Africa and still be a part of it and kind of in the mixer. So for me, it was also kind of learnt a lot about my game and scrumming at that level against some big boys as well and kind of getting my head around it and taking a bit with me that I can kind of, I guess, feed on now to know, you know, what it takes kind of thing. So, I did enjoy last year and, got some good game time for the All Blacks as well, which is, fortunate. And,
How good. So what are the plans going forward for you guys? Once you're recovered, you both signed with the Crusaders for 2 more years.
Till next year.
End of next year. And you're the same or you went longer?
Hasn't been released yet, but
just
letting you know, but it's another.
Is this live?
I guess I kind of made my decision around good to kind of settle down here and I think start a life with my partner here as well. And you know, you never know, you might have a kid or two and start a little family here before I get older and wiser.
Speaking of kids, you've got another one on the way pretty soon don't you?
Yeah. Well, literally any time now. So. Oh,
any time now. Yeah. Here we go.
Yeah.
Keep the phone on.
Exciting. And like I said, with this injury, because when I had my first daughter, I remember I was at the birth and had to pack my bags and leave the day after.
Oh, true.
Yeah, to head off to All Blacks. And that was tough because missed, I think, so like the first 8 weeks.
8 weeks, yeah. Wow.
Missed the first That's 8 weeks. Eh? So, that was tough. And like now, with this injury, like sort of the timings of everything kind of falls like perfectly because now I could be there to help my partner and just be there for those important, crucial times.
Yeah. Do you know what you're having?
Another girl.
Oh. Hey, what if?
So, it's a boy.
Yeah. That's what I was
It's happened before.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Any minute, an exciting time. So you're signed with the Crusaders and New Zealand Rugby Union for one more year?
Yeah, one more year. Yeah. One more year because, the whole plan was to – this year was a World Cup year, try, play good rugby and go to another World Cup. And, I guess things probably could have looked different if I wasn't injured.
Yeah.
But yeah, now because I'm injured sort of, puts me out for, one whole year or this whole year. So, now I'm sort of, having to rethink again. What my plans are going to be. So maybe stick around New Zealand for a bit longer.
Yeah.
Who knows, yeah.
So you're only 26, is that right?
Yeah.
And you're 30, yeah.
30, yes.
30.
Yeah.
Still so young, both of you.
Young for a prop.
Exactly. Young for a prop.
Another 10 years for me.
Do you reckon you'll be able to play till 40?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I reckon I can. I'm didn't play professional rugby till I was 26, later, so I'm still fresh, eh?
Mate, you're only 4 years in.
Yeah.
40, well, that's going to be good stuff. What about you? But harder for a winger to still be going when you're 40, unless...
Well, that's the...
Although, Cirelli Bobo.
That's what I was... Yeah, we're talking about...
Fijians can play over there, whatever age.
No, is it? But is he still playing now?
I'm not sure. Just surely finished. I think he's like 58 now.
He probably is. That's all right. No, that's for wingers. Yeah, it's a lot, man. Like, obviously, speed becomes thing. But yeah,
you'll just move.
That's
in,
when
back
you just
to
move
your 12,
in. Yeah, exactly.
10, and like. No. 7.
All those other things.
Join me, man. Come
and
join
then
me, brother.
Halfback. See, and then finish up at 9. My retirement. Yeah,
See, we'll reach about to throw into the line.
Have any of you got ambitions to play overseas at all at any point? Or, don't know, just see sort of how it looks. No, you probably did up until the injuries.
I had plans of. I'd want to just go and experience what life is and what rugby is overseas. And, like you mentioned earlier, I'm still young. I could always come back to New Zealand. But yeah, I'd 100% would love to go overseas and see what it's all about there.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. I guess, being pro rugby players, you can use it to travel the world now as well. So, definitely after I'm done New Zealand, maybe look over to Europe or, the American competition by then could be, doing really well or, potentially Japan. So it's, I'll use it to go and travel the world and see other sides and, I guess experience other cultures as well. So,
mate, your content game would be unreal in America.
If anyone's looking for a content creator, next couple of years, give me a shout out.
Oh, but that does segue beautifully into these questions, actually, because one of the first ones is around the Drua team, Indrua. Indrua. Would you ever play for Indrua. Fiji Indrua?
I don't, if I'm being honest, I would love to.
Yeah.
I'd love to play for the Drua, but I don't think.
Financially. Is it?
No, I don't even know. Yeah. If they get paid well I'd probably, if I had to go play for the Indrua, would probably be later in my career.
just to finish, because obviously we played them over there this year. Yeah. You're a god over there. Everyone loves you. There's Sevu chants all over the town, man. Mate. But must have been a pretty cool experience to play it over against them.
No, it was cool. And because that was the first time my family's watched me play.
Oh, really?
Before I left. Oh, Fiji.
Yeah.
Far out. Yeah. So it was cool. You know, but yeah, that question, play for the draw would probably be late in my rugby career
I'd definitely love to play for the draw. Like, it'd be an awesome experience playing for, you know, a country team kind of like Fiji, for Fiji kind of thing. So for draw.
Based in Fiji.
Based in Fiji. That'd
be awesome. Life. You loved it, ain't you? With your singing when we were over.
Mate, what a spot. My kids love it over there too. They always want to go to Fiji. That's where they ask to go. Whenever I say, do you want to go somewhere? They say Fiji.
Jeez, boy. It's a beautiful place.
That's a beautiful country. But it's so cool that they're doing so well as well. Mm. Seeing them beat. So it's like the Canes.
Top 8 at the moment, eh?
And they're probably going to make it looking at the rest of the draw. So pretty cool for Super Rugby.
Dark horse.
They would be hoping
Well, they're definitely a different team at home. Like, they are. You're both out there that day. What was it like for front rower in the heat, sweaty ball?
Far out. I rolled my ankle early on in the game.
Because the fields are a little bit marginal.
The grass, like, that's how long the grass is. You couldn't even see your boots when, like, your boots were, like, covered. Like, it's like, boy.
Cover all the divots.
I ran into a divot when I was kind of carrying my ankle roll like this. I was like, nah. So the rest of the game, I was in the hurt locker. I was battling my scrumming. I could only scrum on one leg, and I was just waiting for, like, the coaches to pull me.
It was like a single leg scrum. It was like a single leg scrum.
But it was my main kind of block shoulder too. So I was like, far out. I'm in one here, man. But yeah, it's definitely a different, environment to play in. The feel, the heat, the crowd, all those little factors, you know.
Yeah.
They do have an impact on the players mentally as well, kind of thing, eh? Especially if you're used to playing at the top of the line fields with the lights, the weather's always perfect kind of thing. It's different. That's why it's so different going over there, because it's just environments that we're not used to, but the draw love it. They love it because it's home.
It's cool to have an experience like that in Super Rugby. Okay, next question. Who was your favourite player growing up?
My one was Waiselissa Ribi. Oh, just watching Sevens. Of course, mate. Just how, you know, the magician, just how graceful he was, eh? Just made everything look so easy, and like how he could just fool people just on the field. It was
very similar to you on the Sevens field, by all accounts.
So. I always thought I would look like him, but nah, what's the playback? That definitely is not.
What about you, Sevi?
So growing up in Fiji, you don't know any other players. Yeah. You just watch Fiji Sevens or the 15s. So, just watch Sevens a lot. And, like William Ryder.
Oh, yeah. The footwork of that man.
Him. I remember just watching him, and every time we'd go out on the field playing with my mates, you'd just pretend to be Ryder. Be him. And, and funny because when I moved to New Zealand, and then sort of, and I started to watch some more of the All Blacks and the Crusaders, the Super Rugby, and it was one of my, this guy knows it as well, but he gives me so much about it as well. Daggy. So he was my favorite.
Oh,
player.
Was he?
And yeah. Sorry. I still remember he did this interview with me when he was with Sky Sports in 2019. At the end of that year, he did this interview with me because on all the stalking they do, you know, they go through all your social media, and then he found on my Facebook, like right down, it was like 2011 or 13. I changed my profile photo to him. And then he told me, that was like in this massive interview, he told me to tell him the story. And he was just there telling him, tell him the story. And I had to tell him the story about it. So Israel Dagg was, it was actually one of my favorites.
Yeah.
The goosey, that guy. Jeez.
Mate, that's crazy. And then you end up replacing
him. And then I end up replacing him, yes.
that is crazy. And it's a little bit like what in your story of how you pick up the Super Rugby trophy as a teacher and then you get the photo of you holding it a couple of years later. Yeah, Talk me through that one.
No, that was, So I was a teacher aide and then we were, that's when the Highlanders won the Super Rugby trophy in 2015. So we all got visited at schools and then, managed to, pick up the trophy and get it. I think we were allowed to, but I didn't get fined or anything, but I did say I did get fined. Anyways, I was, got a photo with it.
This guy's good.
And then, fast forward a couple years later, 4 years later, managed to play in a grand final with the Crusaders at home here against Jaguares. We lift the trophy again and I'm holding it in the changing rooms and I'm like, man, this is actually,
you've done it.
Yeah, you've done it kind of thing. And like, and that was my debut year for Super Rugby as well as this fella. So for us to both be a part of the finals, lift the Super Rugby trophy, it was, you just think about like how things happen,
It's crazy. The game of rugby and how it all aligns and how everything pans out.
Yeah.
It is crazy, but so cool, and that's why I love talking to people about it. But who is the last player you want to see chasing you after an intercept? Who do you hate? Who would you not like to see? You obviously get a few intercepts. Who do you not want to see trying to chase you down? Or it doesn't matter, you're gone. No one's catching Cedric Reece from behind.
It'll be Reece. That guy's
just no way.
Yeah, in my opinion, he's the fastest rugby player in New Zealand.
Yeah,
In New Zealand, and I wouldn't be surprised if and in Australia too as well. He's that guy's quick, man. He's fast, and he'd be the last guy I'd want. After making an intercept, you're feeling good about yourself. You're like, and then you look back, seeing him chase you. Oh man,
what about the first guy you'd want to see?
Gio in a knee brace.
Gio in a knee brace. Well, for me would be Reeks, man. He'd definitely catch me real easy, because he's so fast. And I still remember the All Blacks game that we played in Perth when Tom Banks.
That's right,
man. Tom Banks. He's quick. When he just ran and. He always had like a head start on Reeks as well, and Reeks just turned it up to him. Yeah.
What about you, Gio? Who's the worst player you'd like to see chasing you down?
Big B, man.
I think a lot of the Super Rugby players would be able to catch me. They'll be excited to get intercepted.
What about someone you'd be embarrassed to sort of have catch you?
Probably like a.
Andrew McAleo. Andrew McAleo.
If he caught me, man, I'd be like, damn. Hey, Jesus.
Yeah, he's not catching you. Oh, good stuff. Okay, next one. George, what's the hardest part about preseason?
Ooh.
This one's gone specifically to you, though.
Yeah, I guess it's definitely the grind day. You'll be under the pump, not only physically, but mentally. There'll be days where you wake up in the preseason and you're like, far out, we've got to go do this and we've got to go, climb the sand dunes or got a bronco or we've got to go do wrestle and run. And just those things that tick in your mind. And it's like, if you're kind of going with that mindset, it's going to make it worse for you. So what I found, I guess, is like, you really have to just almost fake it like, I want to be here. And it actually helps. I find that it helps. And I always try and think like Ethan Blackadder. That's why Ethan Blackadder loves it. He attacks it from the front. He walks forward to the challenges.
He runs. He sprints to it.
That's a good mindset to have, you think like Ethan, whatever, Ethan would do. He'd walk forward to any challenge and he'll eat it up. He'll eat it no matter how hard it is. Preseason is hard. And I guess it's supposed to be hard because it's supposed to challenge the players and get the players ready mentally, physically, for the season. Mm. And you do the hard yards then, so that when the season comes, you will get the rewards. So, but yeah,
I like that mindset. I might use that. What would Ethan Blackhead do? consistently ask myself, what would Ethan do in this situation? If you do it, you're probably going to end up in a good spot.
Jeez, he loves it.
He loves it. Okay, this one's specifically for you, Sevu. Where did Sevu learn his dance moves?
Oh man, see the guys right here, man. Oh,
did he teach you?
Nah, that's when we're all around each other, man. Like me, this guy, Richie, And when there's music playing or anything, man, you just go crazy and you just start dancing and you make up all these dance moves that end up like, make sense. And it's like, oh, hang on, these dance moves are, all just links together. And you're like, and when you look back, you're like, wow, that actually looked clean. And like, I always love, bringing the energy and, if that includes dancing,
Just feel it.
It's
good to put smiles on the boys' faces as well, even if it's a laugh or it's
Well, no one does an after game celebration quite like UGO, like your energy and what you bring to post game chants is pretty impressive.
So I guess did it a bit in high school, which is good. So kind of just use that kind of energy and it's always good to bring the energy and lift the boys up after the game, even though some of the boys might not want to, sing or chant after the game. It's always good to boost their levels. And if they see you going hard, they're going to go harder. And if you see them, if they see you amping them up, they're going to go harder. So
impossible not to be amped up after one of your performances. Very, very impressive. Okay. Favorite Crusader game you've played in?
Oh, I think my one was... You want to go first?
There you go.
Well, the final last year, 2020.
Blues.
2022, against the Blues at Eden Park. Man, that was special, man. Like, far out, in front of a sold-out Eden Park and up against a team that was undefeated the whole season. For us to go up there to the Garden and win it like that, boy. It's definitely one of my favorite Crusader games.
I'd probably that final last year was right up there, man.
When you scored your try off Pablo's kick, that must have been a moment.
Honestly, that game there, because I remember that game there, like just before that game, I was just so nervous. Like, I don't know what. Yeah, I was because I was rooming with Rich and. And Rich actually, this one, we roomed together a lot. And then, because this one time he turned around because he likes to, close his eyes for a little bit, like has a little nap. And I do too as well. So I was laying there, and then he was having a nap. And then he just turned around. I was already dressed and I was laying in bed like that. And then he turned around, he was like, "What time are we meeting?" And I told him, it wasn't until later. And he was like, "Bro, what's happening? Like, are you ready to go? You're dressed and everything." And I turned around and I was like, "Bro, I do not know what's happening to me, but I'm ready. Like, I'm dressed and I didn't even know what was happening to me." And he was like laughing. He was like, "Man, this guy's, he's nervous." And obviously because they, they came down to Christchurch and they beat us here and they've had a, really good run there. Mm. They hadn't lost the game, so just lots of pressure. But it was cool to get that win at the end.
Okay, next one. Who's the Carver King?
Oh, there's only one. I don't know. He's got the name too as well.
It's Carver Soldier. They call him Carver Soldier, but he's just a soldier.
All the boys just love it. Carver. Sit down there and just.
It's definitely the Fijian boys. Like, anywhere you go, it's always the Fijian boys. Yeah. Me and Sev's here, and we love it. Eh? We love it.
How often would you have it? Once a week?
Once a week after a game. Yeah, and some teams do it midweek before day off, and it helps them relax and, I guess, unwind. But, yeah, us boys, we just do it once a week after the game and good to connect and put the boys to sleep.
Every Fijian, I feel like, loves Carver.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, like any Fijian you play with around the world, they are heavily into their Carver. Like, how do you get into it? Like, what age do you start drinking Carver?
Growing up, you always see your parents do it.
Yeah.
And you see it's traditional as well, and you see it done in traditional ways and in terms of, you know, to respect elders and things like that. So we kind of grew up seeing it. So it's normal for us as Fijians, as Tongans, as Islanders. We probably get into it around high school. We help out, you know, you're 16, 17 years old, help out around the tanoa, you know. You're told, by your mom, sit here, you have to sit here and do it. And then you end up drinking it. But by the time you leave high school, you're drinking kava, and it's, not abusing it, but you're doing it.
Because you can't have too much. Yeah. Hey, I remember having a big night with Tikaratuma over in London Irish. I went there just expecting to, you know, just have a few kavas, and ended up, I couldn't drive home. I couldn't even really stand. I was like, wow, this stuff's really
rocks,
and I know you can drive on it, but I was like, man, I can't drive, I can't even walk to this door. So I had to get an Uber home, but I was like, man, this Carver is, he must have some strong stuff, but you guys obviously know some of the good stuff as well.
Can have a bad effect of you on you, especially if you don't drink it often as well. And if you do drink Carver and it's your first, second, third time, just drink responsibly. Take it easy.
That's the lesson.
Don't give in to peer pressure, or else you'll be locked there. And
Oh, good stuff. Okay, next one. Ask George how hard it was to stop playing sevens and finally train like a prop and go to the gym. That's from Scott Waldrum, so he obviously knows your sevens story pretty well.
It wasn't too
sounds
hard.
Like it did you good, really, didn't it? Yeah. Got your base fitness, your skills.
Exactly that. And I found it helped my pass a lot, especially left and right kind of thing, and not just having one pass kind of thing. So that's probably why it took me ages to put on a bit of good weight, because I love sevens too much. During that summer, you play a bit and then you don't put on weight, and so Scotty was always told me to, you know, go to the gym and build a good strong back for scrumming. So he's always in my ear, but no, he's a good man, Scotty Waldrum.
He is. Okay, next one. How close was George to playing for Fiji?
That's a good question.
What's that?
I was actually very close for the 2019 World Cup. Even the coaches came to Christchurch and met up with myself and Mana and Sivu and saying, you know, there's they're real keen on having
us. Oh, you as well, Sivu.
Having us on board for the 2019 World Cup for Fiji, represent Fiji and things like that. And you represent your country, where you're from, your heritage and things like that. So really kind of like, I was really like weighing it up. And back then, I had to get a lot of advice from my parents, from Hale Tipole. Use him as quite a good advisor, I guess. And, they always told me, you know, you're just scratching the surface, man. Just give it a couple more years. You know, you can always go back to Fiji if you don't make it here. So I listened to the advice and I held it down here. Unfortunately, I had to turn it down, and I guess it worked out for itself. But I was very close. I was very close to playing for Fiji that year. And, it would have been a different story if I did.
Massively. That's crazy. Did you think you were going to be an All Black? Is that sort of what you had to weigh up? Am I going to be an All Black?
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to be an All Black at the time, but I was like, there could be a chance there where, you know, if I do keep pushing and tracking on well, I could make it. I was like, I'll sacrifice, you know, playing for Fiji to do a few more years here and see what happens. And then, we could always play it off after that.
And were you the same, Sivu?
The same. But I remember when, because like that in 2019, our first year, we were living together, and they messaged me, you know, asking for George or George's number, or they'll ask George for my number, and they like caught up with us, sat down with me too as well, and the same thing happened. You know, they told me, would you want to play at this year's World Cup? And
straight away I was so close to going, because I was like, man, like I said earlier, like, you know, Rugby World Cup's the pinnacle of rugby. Now, that could be a great story to tell your kids. You know, I've been to the World Cup. But and then, because that was kind of like just over halfway of the Super Rugby season, and then like I started playing consistently, and you know, my old man actually because I told him, I was like, oh, what do you think? That'll be cool if I play for Fiji. You know, like it's always been a dream of mine to play for Fiji. And, you know, he said, oh, man, like, you're playing some good rugby at the moment. Maybe just wait. And, like, you know, like, George, you know, because I can always go back and play for Fiji. Yeah. So, yeah, just waited. And, yeah, and then ended up playing.
Mate, that's crazy. So, you guys, you can play for Fiji after, what's the stand down now, two?
I think it's three.
3 years. Yeah. So, 3 years from not being selected from the All Blacks, you can play for Fiji.
Yeah.
Far out.
So this year probably counts as one, you know?
Yeah.
If that's the, you know, counts as one, then who knows?
All right, crazy. Oh, cool. Good stuff. Okay, next one. What was the hardest thing to overcome to become an All Black?
Oh, I guess for me, probably just the doubt that I had in my mind, leading up to my selection, like thinking that, you know, I'm not made for the environment or I'm not supposed to be there, you know, like, and I think, you know, growing up, I always thought, you know, it's never possible. So that was kind of like, my mindset. But yeah, now looking back, you kind of have to change that and understand that, you know, I guess try your best to remove that doubt and say that you're supposed to be there, or, you know, my family would always tell me that you're meant to be there. You're there for a reason. And, I guess that kind of answered the question for me, but
for me, it would be like, cause I'm a believer in, you know, you can achieve anything if you put your mind into it. And, you know, that pretty as simple as I can put it, you know, if, you know, you're growing up as a little kid, you want to play for whatever or like do whatever, you know, if you put your mind into it, and obviously everything follows after that, and you know, you wouldn't know, you know, until you actually put everything into it, and a couple of years later, you know, you'll be looking back and that'll probably be the best decision you've ever made.
Yeah.
And, you know, like for us, you know, we, you know, played for the All Blacks, and you know, it's, I guess at one stage we sort of had to get out of our comfort zone and, you know, put our mind into, you know, like training, eating well, and just those little sacrifices, knowing that we want to be, you know, an All Black one day.
Mate, love us.
Nice.
Sort of goes into this last question, which I do ask everyone, but it's going to be nice to have two actually, but the best piece of advice you have for a Wood Lad listener, so... Almost given a wee teaser there that you might have another one for us. Who's got us?
You go, Trigger, while I think of mine.
Yeah, Trigger, you're on. You're full of advice.
Man.
You've given plenty. What a journey too, man.
Yeah. I guess maybe I can go back to what my old man always told me. Like I said before, if you do get an opportunity, if, you know, not only with rugby, but if it's with your schooling or your first 15 or work or anything, and just, you know, you get the opportunity to, and it's your time to shine, you know, you take it with both hands, you do your best that you absolutely can and make sure that you've left no stone unturned, because you just never know who's watching or who's looking out at you. And, if he sees it, oh man, your work ethic and things like that. And, that could be, you know, the monumental change to lead on to something greater for your career. So
Jace Ryan watching a young Gio down at the club field. How good.
Right. And so, it's, I guess, a bit of advice that I can give some young bloke or young person watching or listening to this potty.
Yeah, I love it. Can you beat that, Seven?
Oh, wow. I mean, yeah, I probably gave away my best before. I was like, should have kept that one. See, maybe if you had told us what the last question was, I could have, like,
not given away too much earlier.
Yeah, that was actually good. When I was saying that one, I felt so good.
You were in the flow, eh? Like, I even noticed it in your eye. Yeah. You're like, wow, he's in a state. flow state.
You know, one piece of advice for me would be, you know, like probably similar to what I said before, and I was like, you can be whatever you put yourself, you know, like you, whatever you want to be, like, you know, it's like you just put your mind into it, and obviously knowing that it won't come easy, and I'll take that back to our, both me and Gio's rugby journey. You know, you put our journeys together, it's, you know, it's kind of same but different, you know, like look at George's one, you know, he took the long scenic road, you know, was
scenic.
You know, it's like for him, you know, but he didn't even give up anything.
Yeah.
You know, but and then every year you just keep resetting your goals and your dreams, and you know, you can tick them off every day, and it's going to be a day closer.
Mate, it was even better the second time around. Same advice, but even better. Mate, you are good. This could be a career for you. You two. Advisors, advice givers.
That's what the knee's doing to us, man. We're just trying to think of all of it.
Funny thing that you just mentioned, because with our knees, because we're in the physio room, like, I remember I heard Jenny telling me the other day, man, like, you're talking like so like mature now, like, and I'm like, hang on a minute. But yeah, no, because I don't know if you even realized when Jill was explaining about his knee,
yeah,
some of the words he used in there, I'm guessing you won't even know. I wanted to like, you know, cut in there, and I was like, but yeah, things like that, like we could tell you, like, I could tell you which part that is, it's been cool learning new things as well, and some of these big words as well.
Yeah, mate, you've both grown up so much since the knee surgery. It's done wonders for you both. But it's been awesome having you on the podcast. Really appreciate you two both coming on. You're true legends of New Zealand rugby, and I know a lot of people in Fiji admire both of you so much over there as well. But awesome to sit down and catch up, go through the journey, and love what you're doing with the We Need Doco as well. Yeah. So look forward to seeing the release of those and, the return back onto the field. But appreciate you coming on, lads. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Jimmy, for allowing us to share our stories on your potty, and we've enjoyed it, and it's been awesome chewing the fat with you, and being on an awesome podcast. So cheers, bros.
Absolute lads.
What a lad, what a lad. Thank you. Thanks, bro.
Hey guys, thanks for listening, and if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can, and also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.